Welcome to the Human Capital Lab, a podcast for learning and development leaders who understand education is the link between employee fulfillment and corporate productivity. Today, we are recapping two episodes, one with Dr. Eli Benetesher, and the second episode features Terry Hart. We are joining the episodes together today for further insights, and we hope that you enjoy. We are preparing for our upcoming season, so be sure to subscribe today. Thank you so much and enjoy. Let's begin the conversation with Dr. Eli and learn a little bit about his background and what led him to become the CLO, Head of Global Learning and Development of Wix.com.
So yeah, my background is very unique to other L&D professionals out there. So it's kind of funny. I always loved education and learning. And even when I was in lower school, I just was so inspired by my teachers, and they really changed the course of my career. And I'm still in touch with some of my teachers back then. But I was a very nerdy kid, and I loved science. And I just decided I want to be an engineer and solve problems and help the universe with that. So I became an engineer, worked as an engineer and the research in the Ministry of Defense in Israel. I'm originally from Israel. And after that, I said, you know what, let's go and do academia. I did my PhD. I wanted to be a professor. I want to educate the next generation. And I love doing that. But eventually, you know, I felt like academia is kind of limiting myself. And I'm a real lifelong learner. And I always want to learn new things and teach new things. So I decided to take my L&D skills to the corporate world, tech world, where I am no longer a subject matter expert, but I can still learn new technology, educate people about new technology, and get my instructional design and creating a learning experience within the corporate world to employees. And that was really my passion. It really changed people's lives. And it's a great opportunity to do that while they're having their career journey. So I found myself in the tech world learning myself a lot about how it is different to, adult learning. You have the university academia learning, but you also have, you know, on the job learning and employees that need to be successful, that need to grow their career. How do we impact their performance, but also their personal growth? And this is something that fascinated me. And I started learning more than just like the technology and everything behind it. It's really about the soft skills and the leadership, really understand people's way of thinking. But I'm a people's person, so I just love that. And compared to academia, which I felt a bit more isolated and lonely, I love what I'm doing now, working with a lot of people, impacting people's lives in a different way. But it's still something that I was always passionate about throughout my career.
Terry Hart wrote a book called Hardwired to Learn, which helps L&D leaders unlock their full potential by debunking learning myths and offering practical strategies. It is essential for integrating lifelong learning into daily routines, making it a must-have for any professional librarian. Let's hear what inspired Terry to write this excellent book and what surprises came along the journey.
This is actually my favorite question because I did have a few surprises while I was writing the book, but one stands out above all of them. Just starting by stating what we already know, most leaders and learning leaders, we all agree that we need to invest in developing people. And we know that there is a skills crisis going on and that we can't really rely on hiring as the only way to sort of bring skills to the table to perform our most important work. And so how do we really address the challenge of investment dollars and investment time and developing people when we have work to do? And so, you know, at the same time, we actually are learning a lot about how the brain works. And there's some really far-reaching implications, I think, of the developments in neuroscience that I think are starting to help shed light on this really more limitless potential to our learning. So the aha moment that I really had, though, which really shifted my perspective and I think really shifted my inspiration midway through the book, was that we have really yet to tap the evolving science for the true potential of learning. So I had written chapter 3 and I looked back and I said, wait a minute, we've learned more about the brain in the last 20 years than in the last 200. And we've hardly done anything differently from a learning perspective. And so I started to think about that and think, as learning professionals, we really have to do more to start translating the neuroscience into practical application to help people learn. Not only is it opening up capabilities for individual learning, but it's opened up new ways of thinking about learning that's going to help address these challenges we face in the corporate world.
As we all know, as we go through our journey, lessons are being learned along the way. Let's hear from Dr. Eli to see, during his first role, what is one lesson that he learned that he still follows today?
Even from my academic career, what I learned is about you have to really know your audience. I mean, I had a few deer in the headlights moments, and I think that in order to create really successful learning programs, workshops, courses, and whatnot, you really need to do the research and understand who is your audience, the demographic, prior knowledge, what makes them tick. Of course, it's easy when you have a very homogeneous audience, but even when you have a very diverse group of learners, I always ask myself these questions before I start any L&D project. I ask, by the end of this learning experience, what do I want the audience to know, to think, to feel, and then do? So if I'm able to crack that, even if I have a very diverse learning group, my training is going to be successful. And yes, training can create an emotional response that will stick with you even after you went through that learning experience.
In Terry's book, she discusses artificial intelligence, AI, and human intelligence, HI. And for listeners who have not read her book, she's going to share with us lessons learned when these two are not balanced.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think about the balance and the trade-offs of sort of investing in what I think is AI and technology or HI or human intelligence. And I coined that term human intelligence to highlight the fact that we need to actually start thinking about it as something that we're really developing in concert with how we're thinking about technology and AI. These new tools have been really encroaching on the work of humans. And while it's been helpful, it hasn't always been done in a balanced way. And in fact, we know of situations where AI can amplify systemic problems that are already happening in areas like decision making. For example, a few years ago, we found out that the healthcare algorithms that were used to make decisions at U.S. hospitals were found to be racially biased. And what they were doing is they were looking at total healthcare spend as an indicator of patient health risk. And so because Blacks had had historically reduced access to healthcare, the AI was incorrectly identifying these Black patients as lower risk. Even though they may have been sick or even more sick than similarly afflicted white patients. And that was in a Nature study in October of 2019. I found lots of other examples. I think that one was the one that was best documented. But as we look ahead too at advances in technology, advances in the Internet of Things and the connectivity around our homes, gene technology and what's happening with advancements in stem cell technology, we know that decisions are going to become increasingly complicated. And we're not really going to be able to rely on computers to kind of figure out how to make the decisions around these things.
This is a great segue into our next segment as we discuss DE&I programs with Dr. Eli. You have to implement human intelligence to create these type of programs. Let's hear more from Dr. Eli.
I think in a global organization, you have to have a lot of task forces. I mean, we have DE&I squads, working groups, the DE&I collective. Each one is dealing with a different aspect of DE&I and attacking it in their own domain. So, for example, I'm a part of the working group that is related to education. So we're doing all of the DE&I training programs that are important for us as WICs, because it's not just about general DE&I stuff that you want to do. It's really about what is the best DE&I approach and programs for your specific organization. So we're creating a lot of relevant DE&I programs that are not being forced. This is something we want people to be exposed to. We want to have it available. We want to educate people and give them all the information. Obviously, we're doing special occasions and special trainings when we have Pride Month or Black History Month or other important days and months within the year. We also have, for example, cultural awareness workshop that we worked on that is very, very specific to our needs. Because we're a global company, the founders are actually in Israel. Our biggest headquarters is in Israel, but we have a lot of Americans and sometimes even working Americans and Israelis, people in America managing people in Israel and vice versa. That could create a lot of friction. So for us, understanding the different cultures and understanding the different languages and attributes is so, so, so important. So that was one of the biggest things we wanted to do to make sure that we all feel inclusive. We all feel something. We all understand one another. Also, we have a lot of things that relate to intersectionality and gender identity, because again, global company in every country, they view these things in a different way. Not a lot of people are aware of all, you know, pronouns, and how to really be careful with the language, how you approach people and what you say. So it's really about educating people to have inclusivity and a safe environment. So that's from that perspective. On the other hand, there's a sneaky way of D&I that's relevant to my own specific department. Because we are content creators, we have to make sure we embed D&I with all the content that we create. So we have very specific inclusive language guidelines, and we have very specific guidelines in terms of the design and the visual components that we put to our trainings, that it's not, shouldn't be, you know, stereotypical or not inclusive. So having all these guidelines, we create content, we're very conscious about it, but we're also very open to feedback. We got a few feedbacks. So we have some misses here and there when we create training, that this picture was offensive or that word is not, you know, in place. And we immediately changed and tweaked that. So we're learning again. We're still, I think, in the early stages of our D&I journey as a company, but we're trying to attack it as much as we can and trying to make it feel natural and not forced. Not people saying, oh yeah, they're doing it just because of the sake of doing it. It has to be part of the culture. And it has to be the part of who we are as a company.
As we continue to talk about learning, let's hear Terry talk about her 6 barriers to learning and her insights on how to prevent such barriers.
When we look at how these barriers show up in an organization, I think they really illuminate what does it mean to be a learning organization, because we are discovering things that make an organization open to learning, embracing diverse perspectives and viewpoints, being willing to make mistakes, having a safe place to make mistakes and creating psychological safety, embracing a fail-fast mentality and being vulnerable. All of these things are actually also necessary to creating a culture where people want to stay and feel a sense of belonging. And so interestingly, I think there's a lot of overlap and demand for thinking through how do we really create organizations that learn? And I think that means not just role modeling learning of, look, I'm taking a class or look, I'm reading a book, but role modeling learning from mistakes that we make and failures that we experience, welcoming constructive conflict. I think as a leader, one of the most powerful things I think I can do is actually to admit openly to my team when I make a mistake. And so I think like creating an environment where you really are driving learning as a way of increasing understanding and growing your team and growing the business is going to be also one where people want to work. I think one of the most important things we can do from a talent perspective is to just see us all as changing and growing.
As we discussed with Terry how learning is a way of increasing understanding and growing for team members, let's hear from Dr. Eli as he discusses the future trends for L&D professionals.
Wow. I mean, that's a really good question. I think I see, first of all, a shift in the persona of an L&D professional. Old school L&D professionals, I don't think they will survive if they don't adjust and acquire the skills needed for today's new digital age, right? Okay. L&D needs to be more tech savvy, because I think the ed tech, the technology now in L&D, there's so many great ones, great vendors that we're meeting at those CLOs. And in order to utilize them right, you need to be a little bit more tech savvy and understand how you can use that technology to create better training, more innovative training, and also scale better and be more productive and effective and create really good, customized, targeted training in the shortest amount of time. So we want to increase that ROI. We want to make things more efficient and productive. Also, we need people that are more data-driven. So It's very important to be data literate. People need to really figure out how to deal with big data, how to understand what's the story behind the data, and then how to communicate the relevant data to the leadership. Because if you're not able to do that, you're not showing the impact, you're not showing the ROI, and then you know, you're not going to be viewed as a revenue generating department, which this is what we need to aspire for. Because then if there are any cuts on, you know, recession and all the things that we've been going through in the past couple of years, they won't think about cutting you right away because they understand the value. They understand that you bring money to the table.
Thank you, Dr. Eli, for sharing your thoughts on future trends. Let's check out Terry as she talks about future projects that she has in mind to help L&D professionals as we continue all to learn in our journey.
I think I alluded to some of this a little bit before, but I think the most significant impact that it's had really on me and how I communicate with other L&D professionals is how we think about our work. We often have the mindset, I think, that if you build it, they will come. And we build programs and we curate content to address these perceived skills benefits. We immediately think that if we're going to change the behaviors of our leaders, that we have to have a workshop. You know, so, you know, I think that thinking is starting to be outdated a little bit. And so what we've been doing is looking at how we can embed learning and a mindset of learning and how we work. We've put in place a listening strategy. So we're attuned to evolving learning needs and so that we're really curating and focusing on the most important things. And we need to curate and be very selective instead of offering many, many choices.
That is amazing.
Thank you for joining us on the Human Capital Lab podcast, a Growth Network podcast production in collaboration with Bellevue University. For more about Bellevue University's Human Capital Lab, head to humancapitallab.org. If you are inspired today, pass this link on to a colleague or friend. Stay tuned for our upcoming new season, and until then, keep learning to unlock the long-term potential of human capital.